Congress tried something new this week. Compromise. After 8 consecutive years of continuing resolutions instead of a budget, and with a countdown of midnight this morning looming, leaders from both parties got together earlier this week to propose an actual 2-year budget. But some members of both parties were left on the outside and made certain their colleagues knew about it, including a record-length speech on the House floor by Democrat Nancy Pelosi and a stall in the Senate due to an amendment by Republican Rand Paul. But as of 4:30 our time this morning, the budget passed both houses of the Congress, and President Trump just tweeted that he signed it. This is The Morning Show on Friday, February 9th. That means it's time for our Week in Review. I'm Dean Kallenbach, in for Kate Archer-Kent. We'll dig into the overnight workings of Congress, check in on the other news of the week from Washington and Madison and everywhere with our guests. And we'd love to have you weigh in as well. Call 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org or tweet at WPR Mornings. We're joined on the Week in Review by Penny Bernard Schaber. She's a former Democratic state representative from Appleton. Penny Schaber, thank you for joining us.
Well, good morning. I'm happy to be here.
And by Keen Winters, a small business owner from Schofield and the coordinator of the Center-Right Coalition of WASA. Keen Winters, thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Well, it isn't that often on the Week in Review that we get to discuss things minutes old, but Congress has approved a budget deal that includes an extra $300 billion in military and domestic spending. Now, it passed easily in the Senate at 2 o'clock this morning, but not before Republican Rand Paul of Kentucky delayed the vote.
I want people to feel uncomfortable. I want them to have to answer people at home who said, how come you were against President Obama's deficits, and then how come you're for Republican deficits?
He accused his fellow Republicans who supported the budget deal of hypocrisy. Keen, is he right?
Well, I think at some point, you can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And while I think it's important to call attention to the budget deficit, this is a real coup. I mean, it really has been 8 years since we've had a formal budget. We've been operating under continuing resolutions. It's certainly not everything Republicans wanted, so we had to give some things. So overall, I think I have to support it. And at some point, too, you know, I think while Rand can voice his opposition, sometimes you just have to be a team player and respectful of the opinions of others and not be a my way or the highway guy.
Well, that massive budget deal also lifts the federal debt limit until March 2019, and it includes about $90 billion in disaster relief for communities affected by hurricanes and wildfires. So those votes are in, but Congress did not avoid a technical partial government shutdown. It only lasted a few hours. It began at midnight. Penny, what does it say that we couldn't sidestep a brief but second shutdown in 3 weeks?
Well, it just says that Congress is not able to work together. They're not able to put aside their major differences and come together for the betterment of our country, which is very concerning. And I think what we see is that, you know, we have very difficult elections that we go through, and we elect people on very far extremes of both parties. And one of the things I'd like to see changed is how the legislative districts are drawn so that we can have competitive elections and elect people who are willing to work for this country rather than for their party.
House Speaker Paul Ryan from Wisconsin was confident that the votes were there to pass the budget in the House, and it did at 4:30 this morning. It was indeed a bipartisan vote. Penny Bernard Schaber, why did Democrats vote in favor of that deal?
I think they voted in favor of it because they know that it's time to pass an actual budget rather than a continuing resolution, and that it's time to show that, yes, we can make an effort here to work together. There were some very important things that needed to be covered in the budget, such as the community health centers and the children's health insurance program and our military. So there were some very important things that needed to be done in a long-term fashion rather than a Band-Aid stopgap kind of fashion with continuing resolutions.
The Keene Winters, kind of the same question, but with your party, with the Republicans, why did the Republicans not do what Rand Paul said that they should do and stay away from this legislation?
Well, you'd already shut down the government. I think Penny did a nice job of outlining the fact that there were a lot of priorities that hadn't been addressed in a very long time, 8 years. It was time to come together. And the only slight disagreement I'd have with Penny is I look at the glass as more half full, and I would give them praise and a step forward away from dysfunction and having ignored, you know, speakers like Nancy Pelosi and Rand Paul, who are sort of anchoring the extremes of their parties, and the middle ground coming together and getting some really productive work done. And I think we should all be cheered by that.
The Olympics are underway, and we saw a record-setting performance this week in the House. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi delivered the longest record-breaking floor speech since 1909. Speaking for 8 hours, Pelosi pushed Republicans to allow a vote on protecting the Dreamers, undocumented immigrants brought to the U.S. as children. Let's take a listen to a moment, not all 8 hours, but to a moment from her speech.
Republican moral cowardice must end. Members of Congress are trustees of the people and of our nation. Why are we here if not to protect the patriotic young people who are determined to contribute and to strengthen America? So I'm going to go on as long as my leadership minute allows.
Pelosi also read statements from people in the country illegally who were brought here as children, and she quoted from the Bible and Pope Francis. Keene Winters, did she accomplish anything here?
I view her speech in the same way I view Rand Paul's, that she was anchoring the extreme of her party. I have no doubt that she's sincere about wanting to grant amnesty, but I also think as a Democratic leader, she had some strategic objectives, one of which is to brand what are illegal aliens as Dreamers, even though they run the gamut from the kid next door to MS-13 members. They're not all saints, and they're not all that much more special than our regular children. But she really works that brand because I think it's going to be used as an election topic. I also think Nancy Pelosi, who's going to be 78 next month, wanted to show a little vigor and to challenge us for leadership. So I think there were strategic objectives besides a political one.
Penny Bernard-Shaver, I'm going to let you weigh in on that as well, but I want to go first to Jennifer from Poinette, who wants to talk about that issue as well. Jennifer, good to have you along on the Week in Review.
Thank you very much. I don't consider myself an extreme member of the Democratic Party, but what I do represent are older adults who are taking care of spouses and others at home as caregivers, and we depend on good certified nursing assistants. Mine is a DACA. Mine is a DACA worker. And there's a recent study that suggests that actually quite a number of us who depend on CNAs have people in those positions who are in that category, that I think the Republican representative has just dismissed as not nearly as valuable as they are. They bring a compassion as well as a commitment that is just extraordinary. So Nancy Pelosi was representing me as somebody taking care of a beloved person at home with the help of such a person. So I'm really offended.
Well, Jennifer points out that the budget deal does not reestablish that Obama-era deferred action for childhood arrivals program called DACA. But Senator Mitch McConnell and House Speaker Ryan say they do want a permanent solution for the roughly 700,000 people enrolled in the DACA program. It expires next month under terms President Trump set last year. Here's Paul Ryan ahead of the vote.
I know that there is a real commitment to solving the DACA challenge in both political parties. That's a commitment that I share. To anyone who doubts my intention to solve this problem and bring up a DACA and immigration reform bill, do not. We will bring a solution to the floor, one that the president will sign. We must pass this budget agreement first, though, so that we can get on to that. So please know that we are committed to getting this done.
So on the House floor, Paul Ryan said, we will solve this DACA problem. Jennifer doesn't believe him. Penny, is Ryan now committed to a deal on DACA?
Well, I appreciate Jennifer's input on this because the people that we call dreamers are essential to our economy in many ways. They are agricultural workers, they are hospitality workers, and as Jennifer pointed out, they're healthcare workers. And we need to make sure that we find a way to allow them to stay in our country and continue to be a major part of our country. And I think Minority Leader Pelosi's actions forced Speaker Ryan to publicly say, yes, we will take care of this. And I think that was a very important thing to have happen for Speaker Ryan to say on the floor of the House that, yes, I am committed to making this happen. And it seemed as if he said that he would do it before the deadline runs out. So I think Speaker Pelosi did a good job.
We're talking on the Weekend Review about the new budget that was passed this morning. The Senate voted at 2, the House voted at 4:30, and the president signed it since then. So that's all happened just in the few hours of this day so far. So pretty exciting stuff as we get a chance to get some feedback from our guest today, Keene Winters. He's a small business owner from Schofield and a coordinator of Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. And Penny Bernard-Schaber, she is a former Democratic state representative from Appleton. It is our Week in Review, and coming up, we'll continue our conversation about the budget and invite you to do so as well. It is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Week in Review on The Morning Show. I'm Dean Kallenbach in for Kate Archer-Kent. What's your take on the news of the week? Call 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org, or tweet at WPR Mornings. Our guest today, Penny Bernard-Schaber, former state representative from Appleton, and Keene Winters, a coordinator of Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. He's a small business owner from Schofield. Our talk so far has been about not only the week in review, but the day in review so far. The Senate and House have passed a budget measure, and the president has signed it all since 2 o'clock this morning. Let's move to a caller, and it's Mike in Cottage Grove who has some comments on the budget. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Yes, I had to call in because I want to make clear, Mr. Winters is supposed to represent kind of the Republican point. If he does not represent me, I'm a conservative. And the budget deal last night, the big part of the budget deal last night, would have looked exactly the same had Democrats been in control. Never before have we seen a Republican Congress waive the debt ceiling. I mean, we are waiving the debt ceiling, meaning Congress can go as deep into debt as it wants. And based on the bill last night, what they've done is they've now put themselves as they will drive the debt, the national debt, to a level that we saw, or excuse me, spending, debt spending, to a level that we saw during the Great Recession, which makes no sense. We're taking in more money in Congress every year. But I want to make clear, this is the beginning of the Democratic majority. You're going to see a wave because a lot of conservative Republicans will not turn out to vote. There is no longer in D.C. a difference. And next week what you'll see is that Mitch McConnell will roll on immigration and even further demoralize the conservative base. But, again, I had to call it because Mr. Winters does not represent our view. If there's all these moderate...
Keene Winters, you get a chance to respond. Go ahead.
And what the caller wants, and I would like to see those things too. But the fact is we have had budget dysfunction and continuing resolutions for 8 years. We needed to get that done and moved out of the way so we can move on to other priorities and take on other issues. And we also have to be ready for a tough election cycle. in fall, and you have to have accomplishments. And so I think those conservatives who say, I didn't get 100% of what I wanted and stay home, are cutting off their nose to spite their face, and they're going to find out they'll get what – if they think this is bad now, you give the Democrats a majority, and just you see.
Mike from Cottage Grove pointed out that he thinks this will lead to a Democratic majority. Penny Bernard Schaber, wonder if you agree with him on that, or I guess I was thinking the opposite, that the Democrats did make some compromises to help with the passage of these bills. Is there a chance, if people see this as a successful thing, that, hey, the Republicans are doing a good job as a majority, and they're getting things done, and they're showing a willingness to reach across the aisle, and so we're going to keep them in power? What's your reaction to that point of view as it relates to the budget?
Well, I think we're in a very complicated time right now, where we have deficits that have been built over the years from unfunded tax cuts and from a war that wasn't funded correctly at the beginning of the war. And we're seeing these deficits that just continue to roll over and over and over and get kicked down the road. I think this bill does, the budget bill does add to that deficit, but it adds to it in a fashion where when we improve children's health care and when we improve community health clinics, we're going to start seeing a payback from that. We'll see a savings because of good health. We'll see savings based on some other things that were in this budget. So I think what we'll see is that Republicans might get some credit for doing some bipartisan work, but they'll get bashed from their base for not being, you know, deficit hawks. Democrats will get bashed from some parts of their party for saying, well, you should have held tight and gotten more. So it's a very complicated, very confusing time for the typical everyday person who votes in Wisconsin. So I don't know what's going to happen in November.
That's the voice of Penny Bernard Schaber. She is a former state representative, a Democrat from Appleton. Our other guest is Keen Winters. He is coordinator of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau, small business owner from Schofield. This is the Week in Review on Wisconsin Public Radio's Ideas Network on The Morning Show. I'm Dean Kallenbach in for Kate Archer Kent. Let's move to some other topics. The budget, of course, has sucked a lot of air out of the room because so much has happened so quickly, and it's pretty big deal. But the stock market has been very volatile. It's been a rough stretch on Wall Street. Yesterday, for the second time in a week, the Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 1,000 points in a single session, closing at its lowest level since November. President Trump has enjoyed taking credit for the soaring market, but this week complained that good economic news pushed stock prices lower. Keen Winters, if the president takes credit for high stock prices, should he also take responsibility when they fall?
Well, I think the answer for that is yes. The question is can you really gauge the market on a day-to-day basis? Just looking here, the futures are up for this morning. They were up for a while. They were down negative. And so we'll see. We look for a positive market opening. But I think he's right to say, look, there's been long-run major gains in the market, and that's worth talking about if you're going to fuss about every day, which I'm telling my clients, then you've got to take a longer view than that, because markets go up and markets go down, and we're really only behind about 2.5% for the year, which is, given what happened yesterday, pretty astounding, and we'll probably recover a portion of that today.
Penny Schaber, any thoughts on the stock market?
Well, I agree with Keen that the market fluctuations have been pretty dramatic over the last couple of days, but it's only down a little bit. What I see is that this market is very artificially high, and that it's really rewarding the high investors, and there's a lot of people making a tremendous amount of money out of this market. I think what we should do is put some controls on the market. And like the tax that was introduced a couple of years ago about when you make an exchange over the computer and you do these really fast exchanges back and forth with your stocks, that some of those should have a fee based on them, and we'd see fewer of those that cause these great fluctuations in the stock market. But personally, I think it's very artificially high at this point, and I would assume that it's going to come to a correction pretty soon.
President Trump's idea to organize an elaborate military parade has been generating controversy this week. Democratic Senator Dick Durbin called it a fantastic waste of money. But Democrats aren't the only ones panning the idea. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham told CNN that the parade risked being kind of cheesy and a sign of weakness if it's just about making a deliberate display of U.S. military strength. And military leaders haven't been very supportive either. Keene Winters, what would Trump have to gain by staging a big military parade in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I think there's an argument that we should thank veterans. I think we've had them after winning wars, like the Civil War and the First World War. But we don't always thank our veterans enough. And so if it was done in that vein, that it was really to thank the veterans, thank those people who are serving. But it's common in other countries, not just Russia, but places like France. And I think his idea comes from having viewed a parade in France and said, this was a nice way to honor the services. But it's just not something we do in this country, but maybe we should think about it.
Got an email from Matt in Wausau who says, we have a military parade every day in Iraq and Afghanistan. Can't Trump just go there? Penny, what do you see as Trump's motive here?
Well, I think President Trump has a very large ego, and he views the military as an extension of his ego, so he wants to show it off. I don't think this is the right way to thank our veterans or to honor the services. I think we could do that better by supporting the veteran services or by making sure that when veterans are home, they have jobs and they have places where if they need help, they can get the help. That would honor them much more than having a big parade that's a one-day event that costs us millions of dollars. So I'm very much against this idea of a parade, and I'd rather thank our veterans in other ways.
Rusty from Marshall would like to weigh in on the issue of a parade. Rusty, welcome to the morning show.
Hello. Well, it is well known around the world that we have the largest and most powerful military force on the planet. There really is no need for all this. Most of these parades are done by tin-horn dictators and people like that with who want to show that they're not afraid, and me too. I think this is just nothing but an ego thing by our president, and we can well do without it. I'm wondering if he was going to want our troops to goose step when they go and review.
Thank you, Rusty. Appreciate it. So that's the look at the military parade. Let's move on to some other issues as we move into the second half of our program. Republican Representative Devin Nunes of California, who chairs the House Intelligence Committee, found himself at the center of a political firestorm over the last week about the release of his controversial, previously classified memo regarding the FBI investigation of possible ties between Russia and President Trump's 2016 campaign. Penny Bernard-Shaver, what's your assessment of the Republican memo?
He has a lot of power as the chair of the House Intelligence Committee. He has a lot of power and a lot of responsibility, and I think that his actions were done for a very strong partisan reason, and that he should really be looking into the allegations of Russian interference and not really looking into the interference from political parties. That should be done in another committee. And again, I go back to the idea that our elections are very complicated these days, and if political parties are interfering with each other during an election, we need to change the rules of the elections. We need to make sure we have competitive elections that are supported by the citizens of our country rather than millions and billions of dollars being spent by outside interests that help get the extremes of both parties elected. It's time for us to correct our elections and allow for these for competitive elections to occur in our country. And the way Representative Nunes has been acting makes me think that he's really being a very partisan lightning rod and trying to take some attention off of President Trump by bringing it to himself versus actually doing his job.
Keene Winters, did the memo do anything to demonstrate Republican claims that the FBI abused its surveillance powers as it looked into the possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russian officials?
I think it raises that issue. And I would say, you know, it's, remember, this is the Committee on Intelligence, and what they have is oversight on how the intelligence community functions. And we should all be concerned that the government can use essentially FISA warrants to spy on private citizens and essentially gut your Fourth Amendment rights to privacy. And so those are really important issues that I think deserve attention, and we should do those. I don't, you know, Devin Nunes may be political, but certainly Adam Schiff, the ranking member, is also extremely political. And I think that's been the issue is for a lot of Republicans is to, they're so tired of what has been political bias, both in members of Congress as well as members of the so-called bureaucracy who are supposed to be neutral, that they really, really wanted someone to stand up and give our perspective, and we're glad that Devin Nunes did.
Chris in Blue Mound would like to join the conversation. Chris, good to have you along.
Yeah, good morning. You know, I think this, with respect to this military parade, it's a dangerous precedent. I don't think we've ever had a president that has pandered to the military like Trump has. And there's really the reason behind that is because I think Trump is trying to build a firewall around himself and his presidency so that if he does actually face impeachment, he will call on the military to resist this constitutional move. I don't think anybody would be surprised that if Trump's presidency was in peril and he was facing an impeachment, that he would invoke the military or try to call on the military to intervene.
So you see a connection between the Russian probe, the Russia probe, and the call for a parade?
Well, he sees that this is coming closer and closer to the presidency. And, you know, all along he's wrapped himself in the flag. He's pandered to the military. And this parade is just another way to for him to get himself closer to the military, gain more loyalty amongst the ranks. And ultimately something that he could, I believe he could call on them to intervene if there was a move towards impeachment.
Chris, thank you for your call. We're in the Week in Review on the morning show, and I'm Dean Kallenbach, and for Kate Archer Kent. We're joined by Penny Bernard Schaber, former state Democratic state representative from Appleton, and Keene Winters, small business owner from Schofield and coordinator of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. Let's move to one more national issue before we move into some state topics. One of President Trump's top White House aides, Staff Secretary Rob Porter, resigned this week after a British newspaper reported allegations of domestic violence by two of his ex-wives. In a written statement announcing his departure, Porter called the allegations outrageous and simply false. Following the allegations, top Republicans such as White House Chief of Staff John Kelly and Porter's former boss, Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah, defended him. Keene Winters, did they do the right thing by backing Porter?
Well, temporarily, yes, but of course they have since rescinded that since credible allegations have come forward. But I remember these are allegations. We shouldn't go around losing our jobs every day just because there are allegations out there. Once they become credible, I think issues like domestic abuse are those kinds of things that go right to the heart of character. Even though, you know, this person could have been a perfectly good employee at whatever they were doing, and I'm sure that's the experience that Orrin Hatch and John Kelly had with him. And so I would hope that they wouldn't if I worked with someone, they wouldn't just throw me over the bus, under the bus right away.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if I did in fact commit something as heinous as that, that they would let me go.
Penny Bernard Schaber, how serious do you think these allegations are for the White House, even though Porter resigned?
Well, I think the allegations are very serious, partly because it sounds like his background check or his vetting was not done completely, and that a person who had access to a lot of information in our government was not properly checked and vetted. And with his background, it seems as if he has a tremendous amount of anger issues, and that could cause future problems even at his job versus just at his home. So I do think the investigation needs to be completed and that he should not be in the position that he was in.
We'll look at some state issues in just a bit. We're having a lively exchange of ideas this morning on the Week in Review here on The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Week in Review on The Morning Show. Dean Kallenbach here in for Kate Archer-Kent today. To join our conversation, love to have you, call 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org, or tweet at WPR Mornings. Penny Bernard Schaber is one of our guests. She's a former Democratic state representative from Appleton. Keene Winters is the other. He's a small business owner from Schofield and coordinator of Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. Let's go next to the phones as we shift into some state topics. Nate of Milwaukee is here to join us. Nate, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I noticed that the ability for local governments to work together on transit projects and form regional transit authorities is being discussed again in terms of removing the bans, the state ban on a regional transit authority. And one of the things that Robin Voss complained about was unelected bureaucrats. I have a couple of thoughts on that, and one is to simply make the board of a regional transit authority elected or made up of the elected mayors and county executives. I'd also point out that I'm waiting for Mr. Voss to make the Public Service Commission, which is not elected, but does give power companies the ability to raise their rates, when they're going to be put on the ballot, say, in November when we have a governor's or presidential election. And the Koch brothers have spent a lot of money through Americans for Prosperity on undermining the ability for local governments to have their own transit authority. So is this veto power being given to unelected people from out of state?
Thank you, Nate. And just to provide a little background, a legislative proposal by state Democrats is looking at the possibility of creating a Southeastern Regional Transit Authority to link Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha counties. According to a news release, the proposed legislation would allow an RTA to oversee transit services in Racine, Kenosha, and Milwaukee, and it would also allow the RTA to acquire property, bond, or implement a 0.5% sales tax increase in the area to fund those efforts. Now, public transportation options can decrease pollution and improve the quality of life for citizens, Democrats say. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says Wisconsin doesn't need a brand new taxing authority with the power to raise taxes with little public input. Keene Winters, what do you think of this idea of a regional transit authority for southeastern Wisconsin?
Well, I to be honest, I think it's worth looking into. I mean, I don't like necessarily the idea of having an extra taxing authority where you have unelected people, but using the sales tax to fund transit, I think, is a good idea, because transit really picks people up from the neighborhoods, delivers them to places where they get services or buy things, and it makes more sense to use a funding mechanism like sales tax rather than property taxes for that service. So I like that bit. So I think there's some good things in there that should be considered. But I am always troubled about having another authority which can raise taxes and without any seeming responsibility to the taxpayers.
Yeah, Penny Bernard Schaber, should we have another taxing authority in southeastern Wisconsin?
Well, when I was in the state legislature, I was the author of a regional transit authority bill that would have been for the Fox cities. And Governor Doyle had put regional transit authorities in his budget the first term of office that I was in there. And I do support regional transit authorities. The bill that I put forward asked for aldermen or city council or town board people to be part of the transit authority board so that you would have elected people who were responsible for the taxing authority. And we also had a referendum that said, you know, if the community doesn't want it, then the community can object to it, but then they wouldn't get the transit services. So we made a very large effort. The 6 years that I was in office, we worked very hard to try to pass this. I would hope that Representative Voss would understand that getting to and from work is a very important part of a successful family life, and that he would take his objections and put them aside and actually let the citizens of Wisconsin make decisions on how they want to support public transit. I remember having a long discussion with him, and he basically told me that he just philosophically disagreed with regional transit authorities and therefore he would not allow a vote on the bill. And so there, that's where I stand. I think we should have regional transit authorities.
Let's stay in the area of transportation. Last month, President Donald Trump called on Congress to approve $1.5 trillion in infrastructure plan that would likely require states to put some money up to receive the federal funds. And now top Republican lawmakers in Wisconsin seem to be getting on board with the idea of toll roads as a way of raising the necessary match money. Republican State Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald called it the only practical way to go. Keene Winters, do you think it's only a matter of time till we see toll roads in Wisconsin?
I guess it might be. And so I guess Robin Voss's philosophy is gaining ground on this issue. He's been a supporter of those for a long time. Culturally, I don't know that Wisconsinites are happy to see it. But, toll roads aren't your father's toll road anymore either. And, you can, if you go to Illinois, you can get the I-Pass, you can drive right through. And given that we're going to have probably electric or other alternative fuel vehicles in the future, it might be a good way to really tax people in a way that conforms to their actual utilization of the roads. And that kind of a fee that matches utilization to what you're charged, I think, is a good way to go, and that's why it's beginning to gain some ground in those people who think about it.
And this week, Governor Walker signaled that he would be open to tolling if there's an equivalent tax decrease. And he's not in any way suggesting support for it. Penny, what do you make of Walker's stance on this?
Well, I think that's interesting that he would say he would go for tolling if there was a tax decrease to match it. Then we're still at a zero-sum game, and we have no money to pay for our roads. I think tolling has potential. However, tolling will take quite a long time to be put in place. We would have to spend money to put the tolling in place, and we'd have to spend money to maintain the tolling. We already have a system that was working at one time that was an index tax gas and our gas tax, and I think we should return to that, because then people who buy gas pay for the roads, and because they're using the roads as they buy gas. So, I don't think tolling is the answer 100%. It could be part of it, but I really don't think it's the full answer to our problem for making sure that we have good roads in Wisconsin.
Anne from Green Bay is on the line. She'd like to share her take on toll roads. Anne, something we need?
No, I agree with Penny. We have already, I believe, a bunch of toll booths all over the state of Wisconsin. They're called gas pumps. And we can initiate a gas tax almost instantaneously and collect tons and tons of hundreds of thousands of dollars in revenue by the time we could initiate a toll booth, which I think is a waste of money. So, like I said, we have toll booths. They're called gas pumps. We just raise the gas tax a few cents and create revenue that way.
And actually, the governor had indicated last week that he might be willing to raise the gas tax. Keene Winters, do you think that's something that's do you think the toll roads are more likely than increased gas tax?
I like toll roads better than increased gas tax. And with all due respect to the caller and Penny, you know, that's the culture, is we've done the gas tax. But the technology is changing. We have electric vehicles on the road. You can buy your gas in another state, and you can drive to Door County and home again in efficient fuel vehicles and never touch a gas pump in Wisconsin. So you really need to, you want to have good fees that match what people use of the service. And I think tolls, today's tolls, where you just drive by, you don't have to stop, there aren't coins, are so much more efficient than they were in the past. It's really, really something we have to look at as we go into the future. And so in the meantime, should we have an index gas tax? I think what we really do need all of those things, because we now have a segregated transportation fund. We should come up with a plan that makes it sound now and in the future, and probably gas tax for now, as well as tolls, are part of that plan.
Let's move on to some other issues in state government. A state Senate committee passed a scaled-back version of a bill yesterday that would allow developers to fill state wetlands without permits. Primary opponents to the bill, like Ducks Unlimited and Wisconsin Trout Unlimited, didn't fight this latest iteration of the proposal after lawmakers amended it to protect rare and high-quality wetlands and require permits for larger construction projects. Penny Bernard-Shaber, do you think this proposal strikes a balance between environmental and economic concerns?
Well, I would like to give Senator Coles a credit for recognizing that the bill that was originally put forward was a terrible bill and that it would have really hurt the wetlands here in Wisconsin. I think the bill, the amendment that the senator put forward, is better than nothing. But actually, all the wetlands that we have left in Wisconsin are essential to our protection of our water quality and protection of our habitat for fishing and wildlife and a wide variety of things such as hunting and fishing that bring a lot of economic balance and economic success to Wisconsin. And we have to protect what wetlands we have left. We can't just continue to fill them in and do it, especially without any kind of state oversight. So kudos to Senator Coles for making an effort to fix this a little bit, but I think this bill should have been put aside a long time ago.
Let's bring John of Green Bay into the discussion now. John, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, good morning. Just to kind of echo what was just said, I feel a little bit like when we gave Foxconn kind of a blank check or blank slate environmentally, it opened the door for a lot of other, you know, a lot of initiatives that just got brought forward. I don't think the one that was just brought forward, they expected to get the outcry that they did. But wetlands are something that, you know, you just don't start messing with. And we've continued to ignore science in our state. We've continued to ignore that and deregulate, thinking that businesses are going to do the right thing. And I'm sorry, I just don't see that happening, over the long haul. So this is the kind of thing that just at the federal level and our state level is getting exceptionally frustrating to most people.
Keene Winters, you agree with John? Are these wetlands regulations that are proposed, are they taking away resources that we won't get back?
No, I think, remember, if you fill more than 10,000 square feet, you need to go and add wetlands somewhere else to offset that. And so I think that process is going to accelerate, and we're going to do more in terms of also creating wetlands. The problem had been is that we were going through permitting processes and for very small parcels of land. And that wasn't really an efficient use of our resources in terms of protecting wetlands. Now we've got some balance. We're going to let people deal with the small stuff without as much regulation, and we can focus our energies on really the grander scheme, which is instead of these small little areas, which, you know, are a divot, and we call them wetlands, and really focus on those areas which are larger wetlands and are real wetland ecosystems.
Moving to some more economic news, Governor Scott Walker is proposing to offer larger tax credits to guarantee that consumer products giant Kimberly-Clark keeps its manufacturing facilities open in Neenah and Fox Crossing rather than eliminating 600 jobs as part of a planned restructuring. The governor is asking the legislature to give Kimberly-Clark tax credits on par with those that were offered to Foxconn Technology Group for their big development in the southeastern part of the state. Keene Winters, good idea. Is it doable?
I think it's a good idea, and it's doable. And I know people will look at it and say, gee, that's a lot of money. But like Foxconn, this is a strategic industry. We have sustainable forestry in Wisconsin. We need a market for that. Well, we should be protecting the paper industry somewhat from the unfair competition that really comes from China, Russia, and Indonesia, where workers aren't paid well, where workers are not in safe conditions, where the harvest is not done in a sustainable way. And you even focus on the Russian logging camps that essentially have North Koreans who've been sold by their leadership as slaves. We shouldn't let that kind of competition delete jobs in Wisconsin and delete a market for our product here, which is sustainable forestry. And so in taking all those things, a broader strategic look, I think it's a good move.
Penny Bernard Schaber, the Democratic lawmakers from the Fox Valley, have proposed the creation of a $60 million papermakers fund, roughly 2% of the money Wisconsin committed to Foxconn, as a way to stabilize the paper industry in your community. It would help papermakers like Kimberly-Clark pivot to making products that are in higher demand, like cardboard. What could this plan do that the governor's proposal couldn't? And we have about 20 seconds.
Well, I think the governor is very late in this game, that we should have been looking at the paper industry as an essential industry for Wisconsin for a long time. Six plants have closed here in the Fox Valley area, and we've lost 1,600 jobs or more in this area. And it's time to look at the paper industry and make sure that it is sustainable, as Keene said, with the forestry. But it should not only be to KC, and it should not only be tax incentives that don't have any kind of accountability. We also have to consider that that Congress just passed a huge tax cut that will give KC a very big tax decrease. And if they're using it to increase their CEO salary or shareholders' wealth, that's the wrong way to use it. They should put it back into their company and use it to support their workers.
Penny Bernard Schaber and Keene Winters, thank you for joining us on the morning show's Week in Review, which was produced by Nyasia Ellison and Bill Martins. Michelle Johnson is executive producer of the morning show. Coming up Monday at this time, we'll talk with a psychologist who wants to help people make peace with grief as a form of love, not just a problem to be solved. I'm Dean Collin, back in for Kate Archer Kent on the Ideas Network.